Hello, you're listening to The Sower, a podcast of the Ciceronian Society. The Ciceronian Society equips and encourages Christian scholars to serve the church as a center of cultural and civic renewal. To learn more about us, our events, our journal, Pietas, to sign up for our newsletter and make your tax-deductible gift, please go to ciceroniansociety.org. I'm Josh Bowman, Executive Director of the Ciceronian Society. Before we get started, I'd like to open the show in prayer, and since this will likely air on the second Sunday of Advent, I offer the following collect assigned for this week in the Book of Common Prayer. Blessed Lord, who caused all Holy Scriptures to be written for our learning, grant us so to hear them, read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest them, that by patience and the comfort of your holy word we may embrace and ever hold fast the blessed hope of everlasting life, which you have given us in our Savior Jesus Christ, who lives and reigns with you in the Holy Spirit, one God, forever and ever. Amen. Today's show is something a little different, as I've invited some friends of the Ciceronian Society, all members, to a casual conversation about Advent and the Christmas holidays. I'm sure you're going to enjoy this. We had a lot of fun recording it. It goes between funny and serious on purpose, and lots of just fun stuff to talk about. I hope to make this a tradition that we do every year. And I think talking about Christmas is a great venue for discussing the main themes of Ciceronian society, which are tradition, place, and things divine. So much of those themes come through here in the conversation. I'm joined by John Wilsey, who is professor of church history and philosophy and chair of the Department of Church History and Historical Theology at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Also, Annie Crawford is a cultural apologist, classical educator and homeschooling mom, and a regular with the Ciceronian Society and many parallel organizations. She also teaches online courses for The Symbolic World and co-founded the Society for Women of Letters. James Patterson, president of the Ciceronian Society and associate professor at the Institute of American Civics at the Baker School at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. I have no idea, by the way, what order to put all those affiliations in. And then we also have Claire Baker, formerly known as Claire Aguda. She just got married recently, and she is about to start a position as assistant professor of politics and humanities at Boyce College, also in Louisville, Kentucky. This is a great episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Merry Christmas. All right, welcome to the show, friends.
Good to be here.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. All right. Well, I am so glad you're here, and I wish we could do this in person because y'all are wonderful people. And I want to provoke essentially a casual conversation where we reminisce, laugh, and just share some of the traditions, memories, and so on that come to mind this time of year. Also, no, this will probably, so we're recording about a month, exactly a month actually from Christmas. This will probably go out the second Sunday of Advent. So keeping that in mind. But let's start. I'm going to keep it simple here. At least I hope it's simple. We can make it more complicated. Holiday favorites. I want to start with Wilsey, John Wilsey. What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Favorite Christmas movie? It would have to be Charlie Brown.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
We watch that every Christmas Eve. So we do.
Yeah. My second favorite is Die Hard. So.
Yeah, we weren't supposed to get political in this episode, but here we are.
Yeah. Well, apparently, Macaulay Culkin's already come out with some commercial where he's saying Die Hard is not a Christmas movie, so it's already in the culture.
It's on.
He can smooch my duff.
We need to edit that one out. Okay. Claire.
Who cares what he thinks? Who cares what he thinks?
Literally no
one. A washed-up child actor? Who cares?
But this is where he makes his money at Christmas in the commercials again.
Goodness.
I don't even know
he
what
made
last
his money in 1990. That's the last time he made
his parents made his money, I think,
right.
From what I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for them. They were smart.
It's like a minute into this recording and here we are. So back to an adult. Let's go over to Claire Baker. What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Well, less than an adult answer. I love the Jim Carrey How the Grinch Stole Christmas for all the laughs. We watch that pretty much every year in the Aguda household.
All right. James?
So for me, it's Home Alone. A close second is actually John Wilsey's movie, Smooch My Duff.
Oh, gosh. We need to...
No, close second is actually Elf. I like the modern classics.
We're gonna need Chris is gonna have to edit so much of this podcast. I really feel bad for him right now, but it's, you know.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, back to an adult. We go with Annie.
You know, watching movies wasn't a big part of my Christmas experience, so I'm gonna try to have a favorite this year. Actually, I've been planning for the fam to watch a Muppet Christmas Carol. Like, we haven't ever watched it together. So I'm trying to get in with, you know, the people, be one of the people and get a favorite Christmas movie. So we're going to try.
Okay.
And I feel very hopeful that Muppet's Christmas Carol will really win the day this year.
You know what, Annie, whenever I am asked a question, like, what is your favorite show? Or have you ever seen this show and I haven't seen it? My response is always, well, I just read my Bible. So I think what you should say in times like this is, well, you know, I don't really watch a lot of movies. I just read my Bible.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping that the Lord of the Rings watch-a-thon, you know, extended version.
Yeah.
That one, well, they year, all, I was hoping that would become the family thing, but I haven't been able to get the crew to do it again. So, you know.
Yeah. We're going to come back to that. But I was wondering, have any of you ever seen the, it's a cartoon, but The Star? You ever seen that? So I mean, obviously it's a kid's movie meant to highlight the nativity. I seriously recommend y'all watch it. It is very, and to all listeners, I don't know when it came out. It's been in the last decade, but really, really good. It's corny to a point, but the way they portray Mary and Joseph every year makes me cry. I'm not gonna lie to you. I love the Santa Claus. I loved the Santa Claus. With Tim Allen. That was always good. But Charlie Brown probably is the right answer, Wilsey. I think it's just, it doesn't feel like Christmas unless I watch Charlie Brown.
Yeah, I've always loved it.
And when we watch, I remember last time we watched it, like my son, who's 13, I think he said something to the effect of, are girls really that mean? I'm just going to leave that one there. Just going to leave that one there.
Yes, they are.
I say,
yes,
well, not Annie and Claire aren't. I know that.
Can be.
All right. Okay. That was a favorite Christmas movie. Favorite Christmas song, starting with John again.
You mean silly or worshipful?
You know what? Go with both.
Okay. Worshipful, Hark the Herald Angels Sing.
Okay.
And good Charles Wesley hymn. And my favorite silly Christmas song is I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas. I have it all completely memorized.
I'm proud of you. No. Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you do the old the voice of that old little, it's a little boy that in the original version?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a little boy.
It's an old recording. That's my daughter's favorite too.
Yeah, it's my favorite silly Christmas song. All right. I have a whole playlist of silly songs and then worshipful songs.
The VeggieTales Christmas playlist.
By no, VeggieTales.
Oh, but
is not
VeggieTales.
No, absolutely not.
You should clarify why it's not on there.
Why VeggieTales is of the devil?
Oh yeah. Wow! Oh, gosh, we're trying to avoid politics, guys. Here we are.
Well, you want all me right, to be go, myself, okay? You know, so go, do all right, you want here the we are. Full on or not?
We got full.
Josh put John Wilsey and me on this podcast and said avoid politics.
This is going all right. So
because he is terrible.
It's a short explanation.
Okay, short answer.
VeggieTales trivializes the Bible in eternal things.
Also, have you ever tasted vegetables? Oh my gosh!
Well, I want to be a cartoon shotgun and blast all of the vegetables.
Gosh, okay. The Cicerone Society does not advocate violence
spirit, John.
Against vegetables.
No wonder Die Hard's your favorite Christmas movie.
This is just, oh my goodness. I don't even know what to do.
This whole podcast is going to become like a Christmas story itself. We'll begin with Scrooge and his grumpy opinions, but we're going to move into a magnanimous Christmas spirit by the end.
Eventually, this
is going to be people's favorite Christmas movie, right?
That's what we're trying to do. Okay. Claire, what's your favorite Christmas song?
Okay. Serious, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, or recently In the Bleak
Winter. That's Advent. That's not Christmas.
Yeah.
It's same season.
You cannot sing O Come, O Come, Emmanuel after like noon on Christmas Eve.
Correct. Well, we start singing it like at church maybe a month before Advent season. We sing early and getting ready for
it. It is really good. It is really good.
Yeah. But fun song. Wait, go ahead.
That's what I was asking. Yeah.
Yeah, fun song. So it's okay. I accept judgment for the fun song too. But the fun song is Christmas Don't Be Late with the Chipmunks.
Never heard of it. Wow, it's a deep cut.
Yeah. You know you were a 90s child when.
Just listen to it once and you'll never, you really
It
never
will
need
never
to.
get out of your head.
No, forever. All right, James. James, by the way, I forgot to mention at the beginning, James on this call is meant to represent all Catholics everywhere. The rest of us are Protestant. So what's the, is there like a special
So my
Catholic
favorite,
answer?
my favorite Christmas song is whatever the Pope tells me is the no, it's Joy to the World.
That's a great one. I love it.
Yeah, and my silly one is This Christmas, and that doesn't sound silly, but you need to go watch
You
the
mean by
what?
Duran Duran?
No. I don't know who
This
originally composed.
Christmas, that one.
That's right. Okay. So the reason there's a silly one is unintentional, but Patti LaBelle, one of the greatest, it does a version of This Christmas at a ill-fated Clinton Christmas special. It's like really long time ago, in which the military band screws up. She doesn't have any of the lyrics in front of her, and she doesn't know the song, and the whole thing just completely falls apart in the live performance. And after Advent begins, we begin to play this song over the speakers in the house randomly to make each other laugh.
Okay,
You'll
sounds
know
good.
you're watching the right one when Patti LaBelle starts yelling, "Where are my background singers?"
Wow.
It's
All
so good. It's
right.
the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Go for it, Annie.
Oh goodness. I'm bad at favorites. Josh, I'm bad at, I'm like Googling what's my favorite song to like
So,
try to
what is
come
Chat? What is
up
Chat GPT's favorite
What
song
does the
for
Pope
Annie?
tell you?
That's
You need the
right.
Pope. You need the Pope.
Well, because I just love them all. I love this season, actually, Advent and Christmas. I feel fully human. I have so many things I love, but to pick a favorite song, I just love them all. I don't know. I'm gonna name a song maybe y'all don't know. Jesus Christ, the Apple Tree. Have
What?
y'all heard this song?
No.
Beautiful song. So I love the old carols. Maybe for a fun one is the Boar's Head and Handbell Ivy.
I sang that one, yep.
Right. So these fun old carols. So Jesus Christ, the Apple Tree. Let's see, the Tree of Life. My soul hath seen, laden with fruit and always green. The trees of nature fruitless be, compared with Christ, the Apple Tree. So it's just this kind of beautiful old style carol. Go look it up on Spotify.
Who's it by?
Let's see. It is Richard Hutchins.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
It's 18th century.
That's I'm sur I mean, I know a lot of Christmas songs. That one surprised me. I
Here, I pulled deep for you, Josh. I pulled deep.
I like thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I the Boar's Head reminds me of madrigals. Have you ever been to like a madrigal dinner? When I was in high school, we used to do those. I was in a show choir and did that, and it was just love doing it. And so what are my favorite Christmas songs, since you all asked?
Well, you should perform them. You're a trained singer.
Yeah, I mean, I love to, well, no one's ever, this is, I want to make this public. No one has ever asked me to sing publicly, O Holy Night, which I'm a little bitter about at this point.
Yet.
Yes, right. Right now, if I tried to sing it, it would sound horrible. But
Maybe if you put
I,
on a tight red dress,
Tet
you
Reg,
know?
Yeah, that was.
I was just, I mean, not again, not, but I also was going to make some
We
joke
don't have
about,
the money to pay him for that. We're working on it. That's
that's right.
part of our fundraising pitch for next year.
If you give $100,000 to the Ciceronian Society, I will sing "O Holy Night" in a red dress. No, not a red one.
Full-length gown, Versace.
But I love. I grew up listening. You remember Amy Grant's Christmas album? Any of you grow up with that? That to me was like that was the sound of Christmas and Tennessee Christmas, especially because growing up in Michigan. My family, the Bowmans, were from originally from Tennessee, the mountains of Tennessee. And so I always thought of like that as the promised land, right? And so it was just like, someday I'm going to live down there. And I did eventually. But Tennessee Christmas was a big one. I love, there are two songs, one from the perspective of Mary, of course, which is Breath of Heaven. That one almost makes me cry every year. And then there's another one, I think it's just called Joseph's Song. Which I recommend to you. I think Mercy Me sings it, and maybe someone else, but that one is really good. Because Joseph is is forgotten in the midst of this. And just, and again, both the star and that song kind of remind me of his interesting position. But okay.
Gosh, is that the one? Because I love this carol. It's like, Joseph dearest, Joseph mine.
No, that's something else.
Okay. Another beautiful Christmas hymn that, you know, brings in Joseph's perspective as well.
Right. And now, which of you have ever heard Leroy the Redneck Reindeer?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
No. Okay. Yeah. That one's fantastic. The kids don't like it as much as I do.
I just read my Bible.
Speaking of rednecks over here. Okay.
As the representative Catholic on the podcast, I do not read my Bible.
No, you don't.
I didn't want to bring up Mary, Did You Know? I wasn't sure. Just kidding. Okay.
I'm glad you didn't. I hate that song.
I love it. I'll defend it.
Oh, man. Okay.
Annie loves it. That's okay. We balance each other out there.
All right. Okay, next. This is my favorite question, and you have to deal with it. Is there a favorite food, dessert, cookie you eat at Christmas time? John?
Pumpkin pie.
All right. Pumpkin pie. Claire?
Love it.
We make sweet potato casserole with a Louisiana praline topping.
Whoa.
So it's not a casserole. It's really a dessert.
Oh, man.
It hits. It hits.
All right.
James. It hits hard.
All right, James.
Jim Pat.
Oh, my bad. I like the white fudge covered Oreos.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like those too. Those are good. You know what they're good with? Coca-Colas.
I don't know about that.
All right.
Of course, everything's good with Coca-Cola.
I'll try it though.
You should.
I try to use the holidays as a time to preserve things from the family, you know. So there are these little cookies that I swear my grandma called Russian tea cakes, but I've also heard them as like Mexican wedding cookies. They're like walnut balls rolled in powdered sugar, kind of looks like a little snowball. So that, and then some punch that my other grandma made. This sounds terrible. It's amazing. It's like cranberry juice, pineapple juice, 7-Up poured over peppermint ice cream.
Wow. That sounds great.
That took a turn.
Awesome.
That sounds good.
That sounds like
I want some of that.
It sounds like it needs rum. That's what it sounds like to me.
Hey, we can update the tradition for now. I've got all overage adults in my family, right? So we had to pull out
what it needs is insulin. Like,
yeah, that's what it needs.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I thought I was bad on those Oreos. She's got the diabetes punch.
Diabetes punch.
Diabetes punch. Diabetes.
Except for the fact that I only serve water the like whole rest of the year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You got to go all out. All the all right. water family. Missed.
Well, there is something to be said. I mean, one of the things I learned in becoming Anglican, I did not know until I was, you know, just a few years ago. Advent is another time of fasting. And for a lot of evangelical Christians growing up, I had no idea that was a thing, right? Certainly didn't fast during Advent. But the idea of like having something like that, where it's just so over the top during the Feast of Christmas, I think.
So Josh, you fast?
Believe it or not, yes, I do. Okay?
Just kidding, buddy.
It doesn't work. I mean, if that's what I'm going for. But
is it intermittent? Do you do intermittent fasting?
I try to.
That makes sense with the high church calendar, though, because the 12 days of Christmas is such a feast. You have to kind of spend all that time preparing before it.
Preparing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
The Orthodox, of course, even more hardcore. Yeah. By the way, we tried to get an Orthodox person on this show to represent that perspective. We'll have to wait till next year. But they start their nativity fast, as they call it, I believe, on November 15th. So they're already, you know, by the time this show happens, it's like week three of them doing that. So, okay. Oh,
already forgotten what happiness tastes like by now, right?
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Speaking of, again, since you asked, what's my favorite thing to eat at Christmas? my wife makes these little, just going back to Oreos, she makes like these Oreo, the cake balls. There's no word for that. And then she covers it in white frosting, and then she makes them look like snowmen. Oh, I could eat those till I'm sick. But just like regular,
take that many.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If I do, I mean, just ambitious. My mother-in-law also makes lasagna that's really good every Christmas. That's pretty good for Thanksgiving, by the way. In a few days, I'm gonna have spaghetti and meatballs. I don't know if that's sacrilegious or not.
No, I love spaghetti. It's my favorite meal.
But we always put. It actually tastes. The turkey tastes really good in that because I hate turkey, personally. Okay.
You know, you wouldn't hate turkey if you came over to my house and I made it for you.
Oh, really? Okay.
Bring John a big old bowl of mashed potatoes.
I'm just. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh gosh, vomit.
Annie,
I hate potatoes.
He does.
Okay, I hate them. Hate potatoes. And I can eat just about anything else. There are things that I maybe just aren't my cup of tea, like broccoli or Brussels sprouts. I don't really like those. But if you put it in front of me, I'll eat it. I can't eat potatoes, so that's why James is bringing that up.
Butter flavored paste.
No,
how I feel about.
Yes, it is. It's paste. It's like eating paste. That's exactly right. Like eating paste.
That's how I feel about pickles.
Really? I'm that way about pickles.
Pickles.
I love pickles.
I don't think.
Well, you can have your potatoes. And I'll eat a jar of pickles on your place.
Deal. Deal. All right. Yeah,
that's an even exchange for me.
That's an even exchange. A weird one, but we'll go with it. All right. This being a Ciceronian Society podcast, I want to take it to the subject of place. Thoughts on Christmas and place, kind of an open-ended question. You know, how does this time of year specifically bring you to thoughts of specific people or houses, something about your hometown at the holidays? This, of course, can be serious or funny. I expect a little bit of both, but I'm just wondering, you know, because to me, this is very much a time of placeness, maybe feeling its absence or feeling its presence. Yeah. What do you think, John?
Whenever Christmas comes around, I always think about my grandmother and grandfather's house. Mm-hmm. And I also think about the house I grew up in as well, and our whole neighborhood. In the neighborhood, everybody would put out Christmas lights, wreaths on their doors and so forth. And when I was a kid, I used to love to take my dog. We had a Siberian Husky, and I would take my dog on walks at night after it got dark, and just walk around and look at everybody's lights. I just like to look at the lights in people's yards at night when everybody was asleep. It felt like Christmas doing that. And we used to also have this tradition when I was a kid. We would go caroling. My mother would have people over, and we would all go caroling. We would all stand out in people's front yards and sing Christmas carols. And the people would come out and listen, and we would go to the next house. And my mother would make hot chocolate and cookies and things for us when we would come back and have hot chocolate and cookies. So when I think about Christmas, I think about my grandparents' house, and I think about the house I grew up in.
And this is the one in Montana, right?
This is in Atlanta. I actually never lived in Montana.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But my father's family's in Montana. We'd visit there a lot, but I never spent a Christmas in Montana.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Clear.
So this question is tricky because I rattled around lots of different places for Christmas. We would go to Alabama. We'd go to Louisiana. We'd be in Florida. Now sometimes be in Pennsylvania. So it's like that there's no place like home for the holidays, where it talks about, you know, from Pennsylvania, the Dixie sunny shores, Atlantic to Pacific. And the traffic is great, which, you know, it's only in that song. Yeah. except maybe on Christmas Day, which is a hack. You can travel and it's much less crazy on Christmas Day. But one of the memories that always sends everybody up in a tizzy because it doesn't sound like Christmas is spending Christmases in Florida. They always had the palm trees decorated with the lights. So that's a Florida Christmas, and you get your bike and you assemble it that day and you go ride it outside in shorts. That is a Florida Christmas memory.
So weird. James.
Well, I lived in Florida for 9 years, so I remember that very, very well. This is a tougher subject for me. My mother and father have moved up to Knoxville. So they just sold the house I grew up with, grew up in about 2 months ago. And you know, so that, that makes me a little sad, but there was a, there's a place in North Houston where I grew up called Old Town Spring. It's nothing special in terms of like outdoor craft malls, but it's where we went. And, and then we would go get a Christmas tree at some Christmas tree farm up there. So, you know, it's kind of weird. One of the areas of, you know, America that we typically disparage for not having a sense of place is the suburbs. But, you know, I don't know how, but they managed to kind of make one up there. I'm less upset about the sale of the house now because it feels like a lot of that character has been kind of sapped from where I grew up. You know, you don't drive by as much ranch land as you used to. So, you know, that's pretty much gone now. And in the same spirit of the way maybe you talked about in the newsletter about losing the forest that you used to hunt with your grandfather in, Josh.
Yeah. Annie.
Yeah. So I grew up in Oregon, and then sort of I graduated college and moved to Texas, and I've spent the rest of my adult life in Texas. And so I'm reaching that point where I think I've now spent more time in Texas by a year or two than I did in Oregon growing up. So, and I think Christmas, so this season, right, is important to a lot of people, had a lot of meaning for a lot of people, because it's one of those seasons still for us where you see the chronological, the chronos intersect with the kairos, or let's say like the particularities of ordinary life all of a sudden in potent ways merges with the sacred, the symbolic, in ways we haven't yet managed as a modern society to destroy, right? And I think growing up, for me, a lot of my upbringing was in some ways chaotic or fragmented, but Christmas brought out like the very best in my family. My mom was an artist, so like grew up an evangelical, and she's also an artist. And I think for her, Christmas was this moment where her artistic, creative sensibility suddenly had like a place in the broader community. And so she did so much to develop beauty and traditions in our family at Christmas that really were really meaningful to me. And then we would always go to my grandparents. We'd always spend Christmas Eve with one grandparent and then go to my other grandparents at Christmas Day. And so in terms of place, it was, these rituals were very structured within visiting this one grandma's house. And, you know, we would have those Russian tea cakes while grandma smoked her cigarette and we opened presents, right? And then we'd go home and we'd always be home together. And we'd go to Christmas Eve service and then we'd be home. And I'll maybe with some of these other topics unpack this a little bit more. And then Christmas Day, we'd drive down to grandma's house and have an evening party with that punch, right? And so all of these rituals were really beautiful, meaningful to me. They helped me feel like, oh yeah, like that I had, there was a kind of sacred, coherent anchor to what felt like the rest of life, fragmented and a little bit crazy. So to get to place, what I feel like is that when we moved to Texas and wrestling with that sense of place, right? As an Oregonian who loves the mountains, the trees, the ocean, all of a sudden I completely lost place, which had been a big part of, I'm a very outdoorsy person, a big part of my life and the way that I lived and understood myself. And now here I am in Central Texas in this flat land, nary an ocean or a mountain or a forest to be seen for
occasional
miles
tornado.
And miles. Yeah. And, and so what I felt like is, trying to anchor, replicate for my own family, that sense of a sacred anchor that I experienced myself. Here's the analogy I'll draw. The Israelites were made, they were made a people and they were given a covenant and they were shown the tabernacle. But they moved around for those early years, taking their tabernacle with them. But wherever the tabernacle was set up, there was that sacred place. There, the sense of sacred time and sacred place would be able to be manifested in a different place. Does that make sense? And so I think for us, how I've understood sacred place is by taking these traditions and these liturgies and embodying them wherever we happen to be, almost like a setting up my tabernacle for Christmas, which mm-hmm. whether we're at this house in Austin or that house in Austin or visiting grandma, you know, we take this sort of sacred, portable sacred space built through symbols and liturgies and practices, and that creating a way for us to have a sense of continuous place and identity within mm-hmm. what is largely a modern mobile life.
Yeah. I think there's so much truth to that, because we especially our generations are so transient. We move around
Josh,
a lot.
Josh, yeah. What about you?
Oh, thank you, James, for asking.
There you go. Hey.
but you I mean, see the Christmas spirit growing in our podcast already. Is.
Oh
we're
man,
on a narrative
yeah.
journey, guys.
It could be this Bowman Brothers whiskey I brought to the party, but you know, so it's yeah. I mean, there's a lot I could say here. I mean, Christmas is always a you know, especially for the last you know 15 years or so, has always been a lot of traveling, right? Driving. I remember those when we used to live in Louisiana, because we have my wife's side of the family's in central Illinois, my family's in southeast Michigan. It was an epic circle we would make at Christmas time to see family. You know, I think growing up, I didn't have that as much. In where I grew up in Monroe, you know, I think of my aunt Holly's house, like John thinks of his grandparents' house, but like my aunt Holly, she would always have us over at Christmas Eve. For the Bowman side, and they're just there was a smell. I don't know what probably involved cigarettes, and something else. But there was a smell where if I smelled that smell right now, I'd want to sing a Christmas song. Like it was like that. It was a really small house for two. You know, there's too many people crammed in there, but it didn't matter. We were family, and that was part of it. My grandma's house on Christmas morning, always she spent, you know, more money than she had on Christmas presents. That it was just a chaos, you know, opening them. And I think there's, you know, but I really like what Annie's saying about how, you know, we are trying to create that space for our families as well. I think about how, you know, we're trying to create our own traditions here where we live in Holland, and you know, what do we do on Christmas Eve as part of our family? What are our kids going to grow up saying? Yeah, this is, it's not Christmas until we do this. And, you know, for me also, I don't know about the rest of y'all, but I need snow at some point. We'll get back to the snow question. Y'all live in these other places where sometimes it snows, but I do like snow. At least I like snow for December. By February, I never want to see it again.
Yeah, you're done.
Yeah, totally done by then. All right, next question, moving on from the place one, although y'all can just jump in there if you want. This is kind of an open-ended question. Do any of y'all, there we go. Is that the correct terminology, John? I don't know.
Yes, that is the correct terminology.
Any y'all, do a Christmas pageant. Have you ever been in a Christmas pageant?
No.
None of you? Claire, you ever do a Christmas pageant?
Maybe, but not within my memory.
All right. Okay, well,
maybe when it's like an elementary school, but yeah. I mean, I don't think that counts.
Like kids singing at church or something, possibly. Okay. But
yeah, something like that, maybe.
Yeah,
you know, there's always like little children's books, or you know, or for example, Charlie Brown, right, where there is a Christmas pageant in the movie. That doesn't happen anymore. I lament this.
Our kids did so. The Anglican Church we raised our kids in, they did a Christmas pageant. I watched it.
Yeah,
does that count?
Sure, that counts.
Yeah, our kids did it too. Yeah.
I would sing in it. I don't remember. I had to be probably 13. And I was singing in this Christmas pageant. And all I remember is that the song, the whole idea of my character in this Christmas pageant was I was obsessed with money. And
wait,
so
that was that in real life or
no,
is that
look, I'm there's no way I could be.
I don't know. You probably didn't really act, did you?
No, I was 13 years old. How greedy do you think I could be at 13 years old? So I just remember. We were at a Lutheran church, and I'm singing, and I just completely forget the second verse. And so I'm in front of the church, and I sang the first verse. I'm looking up, and the choir director's up in the balcony. I'm looking up at her, and she's directing everything. And I just start, I get this big smile on my face, and I just sing the first verse over and over again until the seat, because we didn't have a band or anything, until the CD stops playing. And I can still to this day see her face just of horror and laughter, trying to figure out what is going on. But anyways,
that's
all right.
Funny.
Next question. Now, John, you already started talking about this, but think about Christmas decorations. I think, speaking of place, you know, one of the things we did growing up was at night, right, driving around around different neighborhoods and looking at Christmas lights was a big thing, right? And we may mm-hmm. actually do that again this year. But does any of you have like a special like decoration tradition or like a piece of decoration, something you put on your tree? It means a lot to you and your family. Yeah, John.
We have a
James, go ahead. No, go ahead, James.
I thought it was open ended. I didn't mean to jump the
it
line.
It was. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead. James.
Oh, we have a massive number of nutcrackers that I've accumulated for years. They're in various stages of disrepair because the kids are allowed to play with them. I played with them and I murdered them. I have one right here because we were getting the Christmas stuff out. And as you can see, this poor gentleman has lost an arm. I have no idea where it is. That's just sort of how it goes. This is actually kind of a nice one, but most of the time when you're getting these, you know, who knows where they were made. I think they were doing something weird with the nutcrackers. They were like saving Jesus from people attacking the nativity scene earlier today. Very nice. But yeah, I mean, we only have like a small number out right now because we'll be moving soon. So, we just have like the mostly intact ones out, but I've found them all over the house and they've only been out for a few days.
Going to Claire. Annie, go. I'm just going to go with what you guys want to do. We'll go to Annie.
I can share one related to place. So I was talking about how, you know, yeah. I'll recreate a sense of place by preserving these traditions. So the house I grew up in was a two-story house with a really big vaulted ceiling in the living room. And so we always had like a 12, 13 foot Christmas tree, which again, we live in Oregon, so that wasn't so hard to get. Right, yeah. And so just really wanted us to have like a vaulted ceiling living room, which we did. Like when we were looking for houses, like I want this vaulted ceiling, because part of the tradition was all of us kids were up in our bedroom and we were not allowed to come out of our room Christmas morning until we heard the Alleluia chorus. I love this. I'm still telling the kids, look, I know you're adults now, but if you're home and you're in my house, you are staying in your bedroom until I play Hallelujah chorus. And my mom would just cry, you know, you'd hear just like the world burst forth. Hallelujah. You know, I just love it. It is like the eucatastrophe, you know, Tolkien's idea of the darkness before dawn. And then the sun rises with this glorious burst, right? Christ is born. Emmanuel has come. God is with us. Hallelujah. And then we're allowed to come and we would come down the stairs. And as we came down the stairs, there's this huge 13-foot, you know, tree covered in white lights. Mom would put candles everywhere that she could. And it was just such a powerful, potent, embodied experience of the meaning of Christmas, right? The light has come in this beautiful, sudden moment. So I just loved that. That was such an important experience to me. And so we've replicated that by, you know, even me being particular about the home we buy so the girls can come down the stairs. And it's hard to find a 13-foot tree here in
Texas.
But we try to get the biggest one that we can. So that's I think my favorite decoration is that big beautiful tree, which kind of captures that moment.
I think it is funny, and maybe James and Claire, you can relate. When you're looking for a place to either rent or live, one of the first things I think of is, where's the tree going to go? It's such a funny thought. I like, why? Of all the things? I said, well, I don't know where the tree's going to go in here. I guess we can't get this house. But no. John?
My wife thinks that. Yeah. She always asks, where's the tree going to go? So you're not the only one. I don't usually think that, but my wife does.
Yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, my father left our family when I was three. So I had a stepfather growing up and his birthday was on December 10th. And, so my mother wanted to make his birthday special. So we didn't have a tree until after the 10th. We would go get a tree after the 10th so that we could celebrate, my stepfather's birthday. So it was always after the 10th, no matter what year it was. And which meant that we got the picked over tree, it yeah. seemed like, you know. but my mother was also very good at getting the best tree. We were going to have the best tree. We were going to have the best tree available. Whatever we could find, it was going to be the best. And often it seemed like it was this way every Christmas almost, but it couldn't have been every Christmas, but it seemed like it was. my father would come and pick us up on Saturday or Sunday. We'd spend a weekend with my dad. And then when he would bring us home, whatever that Sunday or Saturday was, he'd bring us home. The tree would have already been selected by my mother and brought home. And we would decorate the tree after having been dropped off home from my dad's place. And I used to love to decorate the tree. I loved it. And mom would have, you know, she'd have made cookies and she would have had, there'd be hot chocolate and there'd be all kinds of good things to eat. And it was a big deal to decorate the tree. And I remember all the decorations we had. We had a wonderful angel we would put on the top of the tree. That I was always I loved that angel we put on the top of the tree. It was always the same one. And it was always fun to see all the old Christmas decorations you'd put on the tree that you'd open up the boxes. They hadn't been opened since a year ago. And here they are again, you know, and they all brought back memories. Mm-hmm. So I remember all that very well. And my mother would decorate the whole house with wonderful Christmas things, our stockings. Some relative made our stockings. My brother and I had a stocking. My mother had a stocking and, somebody made the stockings. I don't remember who, but I still have my stocking and, we named our youngest daughter after my mother. Her name is Sally. And so my mother gave Sally her stocking from whenever that was made back in the '60s. And, it's a little tiny stocking. So Sally, my Sally doesn't want that stocking to be hers. She wants a big stocking. So we do hang that stocking up. And so my stocking and my mother's stocking, we hang on the mantle, now. Mm-hmm. And so those traditions that we had when I was a kid and my wife had traditions too, we tried to translate those over. Kind of like how you were talking about, Annie, you wanted to have some of those things that you cherished from your childhood. You wanted to translate those over to your children and have them remember them when they're grown up. And yeah, I sometimes wonder what will my children have when they have their own families and, you know, I'm a grandparent and I'm not in the house, or maybe I'm not even here. You know, I'm not even alive anymore. What will they do? And what will they say about their Christmases growing up? I hope it's good stuff. I'm sure it will be, but I hope it's good.
Mm-hmm. Claire.
Yes. I'm trying to think about decor in terms of transition and the traditions down too, because we was recently married and we have very different schools of thought when it comes to decor, and I'll explain. So my parents,
so you're Jewish, right? And then your husband is a Christian. Is it that kind of difference?
Not quite that difference, although apparently wow. Agudath is originally Hebrew and Agudath is a group there, so like way 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 back there. Possibly, but it's more coming from off the cuff Florida style of things to traditional. Mm-hmm. So my parents have right now, they have the Charlie Brown Christmas tree that they'll put out every year. And last year they decided to do a Christmas tree entirely devoted to Surfer Santa, you know, mm-hmm. Santa with the beard and the Hawaiian shirt. And this is what my dad looks like in retirement, by the way. He's very tan and has a full white beard. So he is Florida Santa, which I think is what inspired... What inspired that Christmas tree? So that's my parents. My school of thought is, you know, I like the Victorians. They're who we have to credit largely for Christmas. Queen Victoria brought the tree over. Christmas cards came about then. Toys, you know, mass-produced Victorian. So surprise, surprise, I have a very traditional-looking tree. It's red and gold. It has little miniature church. It has, you know, very traditional. My husband's family in his tree, they have is a smattering of Star Trek and Star Wars ships. Yes. Like those little Hallmark Star Wars ships that light up and they make the noise, da 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 da. We don't know what we're going to do. it comes time for the new Baker family Christmas as to what's going to make it on the tree and or if there will be two trees.
Yet
to be determined.
Claire, I can share a little bit of my marital experience because, as you can tell, my mom's an artist. And so the tree was, there's an aesthetic standard, right?
Yes.
But my husband grew up more with like the kitschy, cartoony kind of things. And so his family, they were a family where everybody gave everybody an ornament every year. Yeah. Right. And so he has this collection of just, forgive me, love, I love you. We've had minor skirmishes about this every year. His go in like a separate box, which I always try to hide, you know, where I'm like, oh, I can't find your box of ornaments. Too bad Winnie the Pooh can't go on the tree this year. And Snoopy, you know. So we curated a smaller amount of the better looking ones that get put at the bottom is like our like family compromise.
There we go.
Is that, but James, you're feeling so bad for my husband. I see you feel that I'm mean, but like, you know, come on, man.
Yeah. I told him he could put the stars like right in front of the window where no one can really see it, but they can see the lights. You know, it counts. It counts.
That's really funny.
Good luck, Claire. I wish you the best.
We'll see. We'll see.
I was just feeling bad for him.
Me too.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
He gets the shop. Look, he has his shop. He can put up his little Winnie the Pooh tree in the shop. Maybe that's the way we're going this year.
That's really funny. Yeah, we do the kitschy tree with like a little I'm a professional tree fluffer. So we gotta get to the artificial.
It's important.
Artificial and real tree thing. Really good at making it balancing everything. Like for me, there has to be a symmetry to a point, not too much, otherwise it's gross. But we have, so first of all, like the stocking example, my great grandma made me a stocking that I still have. And again, it's way too small. But if anyone throws it away, I'll kill them. Like it just isn't, like it means so much to me, right? It's this little stocking, but she did it herself and it means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And all these, you're right. When you're pulling out these different ornaments, Oh, I forgot about that. And one of the things we did was we've moved around a lot and we've been to a lot of national parks. So if we go to a national park, we'll get a ornament there, but also like, oh, I forgot when we got this at we used to live in Baton Rouge. I found the Baton Rouge Zoo, one, or, another one we got is we have all the four main characters of, The Wizard of Oz, which makes me think of my grandma Bowman. She loved Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. And when she gave me those ornaments. And so those mean a lot to me. But yeah, I'm sure I'm forgetting something. But I think decor is a big deal. Now, I want to get back to this might get a little political. Mm. Real tree or fake tree? Annie, mm-hmm. It sounds like you got to go with a real tree.
Well, I'm real torn, right? Again. It's one thing to have a real tree when you live in Oregon. Although yeah. I grew up looking at the clear cut, you know, the massive growth in these clear cuts kind of ruining the mountains around us. So I really feel torn on this because, of course, a real tree is ideal and this genuine scent of pine and all of that. However, is that sustainable? Can I have my 13-foot real tree? but then on the other hand, like, okay, these fake trees, well, do they just end up in the landfill? Although, gosh, getting one good fake tree that'll last us 10 years is sure a lot more economical than getting, I mean, I think fresh trees here in Texas now are upwards $250. To get, one that's tall and nice, you know, I can get one for $130 that's like 5 feet tall.
Good night.
Come on, Trump.
I know it's really expensive, right? So I'm very torn. Wow. Y'all advise me, help.
All right, James, what are you thinking? Real or fake?
I've done both. Growing up in Houston means that I was in the pine curtain, so it was not as
pine curtain.
Yeah, you know, there's
pretty pine trees out there.
There's just tons of pine trees. People don't understand this about East Texas, but it's just completely
piney woods.
Yeah.
Piney woods.
And
yep.
So when you drive pretty. Up East Texas from about I'm trying to think, Texas City all the way up to Texarkana. It's just all pine trees.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were lousy with them and they were cheap and they were, there were lots of good ones. And then I moved and my wife and I got married and we had an artificial tree and I hated that thing. they do shed, and it's not a nice shed. It's not like, it's like, you know, oh no, there's microplastics in my, in my hot chocolate or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I jettisoned that thing when we moved from Florida to Tennessee, and we are going to go back to natural trees. But I do appreciate Annie's concern growing up in the prairie. And you know, with her cost, so hopefully they're not actually shipping them from Oregon.
Probably are.
Yeah,
probably
at that
are.
Price, they better be.
Yeah, right.
$250. How about you, Claire?
It depends. I entirely default to the person who's setting it up, who's either hauling it from the car and setting it up and doing the screen, or if they want to do the floofing and the whatever. They get to pick. Floofing. Whoever is setting up the tree gets to pick, but the smell is essential. You have to have that cedar balsam, either a candle or some soaps or the actual tree. The smell's got to be there.
All right, Wilsey.
Real.
Real. All right.
That was the easiest call. I knew that was gonna be John's answer.
Yeah. I think you're all wrong. Just kidding.
I just need to learn to settle for small asymmetrical pine things like this, you know?
Yeah.
That's right. I had growing up, when we first started, when I was a really little kid, we did real trees, but I can remember every Christmas it falling or like almost catching on fire. And there was just always some horrific traumatic experience. So I have never regretted having an artificial tree. Now the last one we got, we spent a little more money on, so it was a little bit nicer, but I get it. Like, one of the things that sucks about an artificial tree is when you open it up and you get it out and you're fluffing it, there's dust all over it. Mm-hmm. What you do. And so you're just like, you get a rash and you're sneezing. But
really selling the artificial tree here, guys.
I know, but
unspeakable rashes.
It's true. I would get a rash on my arms from I need to get out my rose
pruning gloves. Rose gloves? Rose pruning gloves?
Yeah, they're super long, so that when you're
I get out my field dressing gloves for when I gut a deer.
There you go.
That's a gristle on your artificial tree. Bone shards.
Okay, we're gonna stay in the political direction here. So how early is too early to set up a Christmas tree, John? Let's start with you.
Well, that's a great question. My mother said that we don't have a Christmas tree until December 10th, but. But she also insisted that we don't have anything to do with Christmas until we've had Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving comes first, then Christmas. So in our household, we don't get a tree. We don't even listen to Christmas music. Christmas music is forbidden. Forbidden!
Okay.
From Thanksgiving all the way until, I'm a Protestant, I'm a Baptist, free church, so I don't even know what Epiphany is. So I know you're not supposed to. I mean, January 6th, isn't that?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't know that until maybe a couple of years ago anyway. So James, it's Jim Pat is over there dying a thousand deaths.
But,
but the timing was Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving until January 1st. On New Year's Day, you take the tree down.
You just hurt Annie's feelings. So Annie, what's your opinion?
I mean, yeah, I'm high church Anglican, right? And so I love the church calendar and the way that it helps us structure our lives together in a kind of sacred time. So yeah, I mean, just nothing till after Thanksgiving is like common decency and and baseline aesthetics, right? Like let fall
baseline
have a chance
absolutely
to like finish up.
Yeah, and let Thanksgiving is a good holiday. Let's have it. Let's do it, and let's focus on that, and then we can do Christmas.
We will tend to set up our tree after, just because it's so much work to do. But I kind of feel like you want to enjoy, like 12 days only for a tree. It's strict Christmas season is kind of short. And so what we've tried to do is lean into Advent as a way to, we'll put up our basic greenery and our white lights, but we'll reserve some of the tree a few decorations for closer to Christmas. And we'll make a real nice fat Advent playlist. So we're playing lots and lots of Advent music to help us. You feel like the Christmas season has this two step to it, right? Like a good story. There's the longing and the waiting and the anticipating and the leaning into, thinking again, what was it like before Christ came, you know, letting ourselves have time to imaginatively linger in that longing and waiting space so that when we pivot into, you know, the Alleluia chorus plays and we pivot into Christmas, you know, you really lean into that punch, right? And that joy and that sweetness and that festivity and like a good story, right? The more you have the buildup, the sweeter the payoff is. And so we've tried to kind of compromise with our culture by going ahead and setting up the tree and getting a lot of that and the lights out, but preserving music and a few decorations to help us distinguish the movements of the season in that way.
All right, James, when does the Pope say you can put the tree up?
Well, I don't actually speak Latin, so I just follow the rest of the unwashed masses to wherever the priest takes us. No, but in all seriousness, the Feast of Epiphany is when we all buy indulgences, John, so you should come. So for me, my wife's favorite holiday is Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So giving Thanksgiving time to breathe is very important. So we actually still have pumpkins out front. We're not taking those out until Thanksgiving's over. So the tree's not up. We do have some Christmas stuff up. Like I mentioned, the nutcrackers, I think that's because of, the kids getting into a box and finding stuff. Normally there would be nothing up, and I completely concur with the total ban on Christmas music, because you're going to get so much of it, that the longer you can spare yourself, the better. I actually saw on social media, somebody posted a picture of a person looking out a window and they could see out in the distance, Mariah Carey. And it just said soon. She was in her red Christmas jumpsuit from the Christmas album that's been tormenting us for 25 years.
It's been more than 25 years, I think. I think it's been like 35.
Too long.
And Claire, what's your when do you set it up? If you're in one place for one time, like when do you?
Yeah, so this is where I'll be happy meeting with everybody. Does not go up until after Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving gets its place. We also still have our pumpkins out. But this is though I am also Baptist, I do have high churchy tendencies. And the Christmas tree will not come down until the end of the 12 days of Christmas, which also being originally hailing from Louisiana is the beginning of Mardi Gras season. Mm-hmm. So you have a king cake on King's mm-hmm. Day, mm-hmm. Which is a great way to kind of extend the Christmas spirit through that bleak midwinter, even though it's warm down there.
Well, I think you all suck. That's where I'm. So I'll be honest. So I violate every rule in the book here. I love Christmas, and we set it up a little early. Now usually it's so in Michigan, there's a high holy day of November 15th, which is the opening day of firearm deer season. So it's usually around a weekend. So we don't set. It's usually the weekend we come back after deer hunting. So it's before Thanksgiving, and the reason we do this is because at least in my family, we're usually traveling at Thanksgiving. And then also like right before and right after Christmas, we're traveling. So in order to enjoy the decorations, we set it up before Thanksgiving. Also, I have a confession. I start listening to Christmas music probably, you know, months beforehand. Now, I listen to just the instrumental stuff. It just brings me joy and peace and focus. I don't make anyone else listen to it. I feel like that's fair. I make my
do you listen to hey Josh, do you ever listen to the Manhattan Steamroller album for Christmas?
I mean, yes, I do, actually.
I love
great album.
That is a great album.
It's a great album. And I usually sing with the Michael Bublé one as well as the Amy Grant one. What's
Michael
the other one?
Bublé.
Bublé.
What's that? Bublé.
He's like a modern crooner.
He's a modern crooner. You probably don't listen to that. They don't have that down in Kentucky. Anyways, okay. Next question. Do you have? I'm going to mix it up a little bit here. Do you have a vivid memory of a particular Christmas morning or present? Mm. Like you just woke up and like, ah, I remember this one. And I'm trying to. Now we don't need to bring up any trauma here. I don't know if that's. what do you? I'm trying to think of one. I don't actually have one at the moment. But Claire, what do you? Can you think of one?
Yes, I remember going to my grandparents in Northern Alabama in Huntsville, and I had never seen snow. So I think at age 18, it snowed. It was a dusting of snow in Huntsville on Christmas morning. And it was the most magical thing I had ever experienced at Christmas. I think that we had that little bit of snow on Christmas.
Yeah. James.
Yeah. I think I remember like the big Christmas for me was like fifth or sixth grade. I got a sense of what was going on in my family a little better. Mm. And my dad was in oil and gas. And if you know anything about oil and gas, it's been boom and bust the whole time. And so I remember that was the first time I remember my dad being unemployed. That was still a very generous Christmas. I had no idea where they got the money from, and it was that's kind of a melancholy thing to remember, but it was the first time I really had a, you know, the idea of Christmas being something that my parents would have to sacrifice for kind of made the holiday more vital, more significant.
Yeah. Annie,
instead of just gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was, I think I was 10, and I'm kind of one of those horse crazy girls. So, we were at my dad's, parents, my grandma and grandpa on my dad's side for our usual Christmas Eve, hanging out with them. And my grandma bought me a pair of riding boots and a riding helmet and a little card that said Aunt Pam was going to pay for riding lessons. So, that was just complete dream come true. And that's when I started riding. I still ride horses. So really important part of my life. That is a huge privilege to be able to do. And so that was a really sweet, memorable Christmas for me.
One of the things that Austin still does have for you, right?
Yes. That is how I managed to survive here. It's like, it might be flat and sunny all the time, but you can ride horses on flat land when the weather is nice. So yes, survival technique.
The classic move in Houston would be to go to your drive-through daiquiri stand on your horse.
Oh my goodness.
That's not Christmas. That's all year. That's celebrating liberty.
You see, Austin can claim to be weird if it could pull that off. Then to be weird, I would be more impressed by.
Yeah, now all that means is by weird, what they mean is expensive.
Yeah, pretty much.
John, you probably remember Christmas presents before there were batteries. Can you, is there like something that really stands out to you Christmas morning?
Well, I'll give you two quick ones. In 1974.
Oh my gosh.
I was five. But I'll remember this Christmas very, very vividly. My dad took us, my brother and I took us up to Charlottesville, Virginia from Atlanta, where I grew up, to visit his mother. We rode the train from Atlanta to Charlottesville.
Wow.
And that train used to be a night train, and it was just magic. I was really into trains when I was a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And riding the train was it was unbelievably incredible. And to ride it at night, I was awake all night. I enjoyed that train ride all night. And then my grandmother didn't have any stockings, so she used her pantyhose for stockings.
Oh, my Lord. That's so amazing.
But the payoff of it was...
You got to keep the pantyhose.
No, don't stretch.
The pantyhose would stretch. So you could put, she put all these presents in the pantyhose because it stretched out really long. And so I remember that as a child. And then another Christmas I remember, I became a Christian when I was a freshman in college.
Mm-hmm.
And this would have been September of 88 when I became a Christian. And so I'd had all these Christmases, you know, as a child and as a teenager. And it was always about, you know, good food and presents and things like that. But when I became a Christian, it meant something completely different to me, you know. And I was 19, so I was had old enough to have a perspective on it. And so having become a Christian changed the meaning of Christmas for me in profound ways.
Yeah, I was trying to think of, I'm having a hard time remembering a specific one. I do remember this one Christmas where, well, two Christmases, I'll give two quick examples where sometime in the 90s, and my dad got our first ever Gateway computer, and he had set it up in the middle of the night, right? When he wanted to take us downstairs, like, look what I got you, right?
Mm-hmm.
That thing was huge. just, you know, thinking about what I'm working on right now, you know, I remember him just being so proud of that. And there was another time where me and my friend, his name is Christian, and we wanted to test Santa. And so we bought each other Christmas presents, and we set them out under the tree on Christmas Eve. And we wrote a note to Santa saying, you need to take this to my friend. Here's his address and here's a letter, whatever. Right. So we bought each other presents just to see what would happen. And the next morning they were there, right? I had Christian's present. He had my present. There's obviously more to the story, but I don't want to just to
keep. So is that what got you to not believe in Santa Claus?
No, I still believe. Shut up, John.
Okay. So you just, it was like an oversight on Santa's part.
Yeah, it was just, yeah. I mean, he did it. So that was, he needed to do what he needed to do. So, all right, next, this is a kind of a quick question. Just see what comes to mind. So, if we ever made an ugly Christmas sweater for the Ciceronian Society, what needs to be on it? Is it, you know, is it like Happy Saturnalia because of the Roman thing, or is it?
I don't think.
Is it like a? Is it an idea. Avatar of James smoking a cigar? I don't know.
that might be good. I might, yeah. I would get that.
Yeah,
I think there would have to be wreathed in like tobacco leaves, whatever it is, whatever yes. the insignia is, instead of like.
And it has to have know. It has to have some smell in it.
Yeah,
some old stale tobacco smoke.
It just smells
like scratch and sniff sweater.
scratch and sniff. That's
the way
brilliant.
It'll work is we'll have an annual conference in which we'll have all of the sweaters, and at that conference, everyone will smoke. In right. This enclosed room, and then you'll have the reeking.
Well, hot box is the kids.
Hot box.
That's the kids say.
We'll hot box it.
Is there an official Ciceronian cigar? Like maybe you could sell the sweater with a cigar on it.
We toyed with it last year, but it was like a bridge too far for some of the other stuff with the ties. Mm. But we could definitely make it happen for this conference.
The answer is not yet.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you make cigars and you were looking for to sponsor an official cigar of the Ciceronian Society, please contact us at. Just kidding. Anyways, yeah, that was just a funny question. We're still trying to figure out some of the different merch that we could do. Yeah, I mean, the scratch and sniff idea is hilarious. Not only could you have a cigar one that smells like bourbon, one that smells like old books, you know, for the Baptists. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to make sure we have that. So. That would be good.
For the Orthodox, we'll have one that smells like bones.
Oh man, I'd like the Orthodox to comment down below for all the different answers you have to this question.
Incense or bones?
Yes. So, anyways, all right. I was gonna. Here's a quick question. I want to bring us all together before we finish here. We got three more questions actually. Has the Hallmark Channel ruined Christmas?
The Hallmark Channel.
Any of you watch the Hallmark Channel?
The Hallmark Channel is peak cringe, but cannot ruin Christmas.
Okay.
Peak cringe.
Right. Oh, that's the right answer.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't like it, just don't watch it.
I had never seen a Hallmark Channel thing or movie until last year, and I watched my first one, and I still don't know what to think.
Did you die inside? It's so...
I died a little inside, but I also see, like, it made my mother-in-law so happy, you know? So,
all right.
So then I was thinking of Chesterton and Penny Dreadfuls, and you know, like, I don't know. I still don't know what to think. Does it destroy our aesthetic sensibilities? Yes. Is there a baseline, happy, wholesome storytelling? Sure. I don't know. What do you do?
Meh.
I don't know.
That's right.
I'm trying to be positive. I'm trying to, you know, not end on a Scrooge, Grinchy spirit.
No, I just you don't have
That's
to.
That's my job.
That's right. That's John's job. But I think we should all agree to not watch the Hallmark Channel.
I will say that I'm generally opposed to artificial intelligence generating content, but they can replace the Hallmark movies. Seems very easy.
It would be so easy. All right, two more questions. Just kind of a general question. Family, friends, local church, like traditions that we haven't mentioned yet. You think that every Christmas we do this. I'll give you an example just for us, because at least in the Bowman side, we all come from the South, from Tennessee. And so we do shots of Southern comfort, and we do them to everyone who's not there with us anymore, who have passed away. And so a shot to Grandpa Bowman and a shot to Grandma Bowman, you know, so we do those with Southern comfort. I've always liked that. We also, I have a friend named Steven. When we used to live in the same town, Monroe, there's nothing to do on Christmas Eve unless you go, especially when you're like a teenager or just come home from college. The only places that are open right are Denny's and the truck stop. So we would go to Denny's, and then we'd go to the truck stop, which is terrifying when I think about that now. But we would always just go there and play video games and buy random candy. That was like our Christmas Eve tradition. It was so obnoxious. But anyways, we'll start with Claire this time. Any like specific tradition that comes to mind every Christmas?
Well, family-wise, we try to do most Christmas. We have this old cassette tape. I don't even remember the name of the whole tape, but there's this one song called The 12 Yaks of Christmas, and it's very inside jokes about New Orleans in the 80s. And we listen. It's the 12, I think it's on Spotify. I looked it up fairly recently. The 12 Yaks of Christmas. It's all these inside jokes about all these different areas in New Orleans that my parents know that I have no idea about. I just know I like listening to the song. So that's an Aguda tradition that is probably a bit odd that we still do most years.
All right, James. I'm sorry, Claire.
And then church-wise, to do more serious answer, we do an Emmanuel night of Christmas hymn singing at the very beginning of Christmas. It doesn't feel like the Christmas season unless we started that. We go for about an hour and a half until you can't sing anymore, until your voice fails. that's always a sweet time.
Yeah. James?
So I can think of two. One is when I was still at Ave Maria, they had a very large manger scene, and we would always have the kids photographed in the manger scene, which is then followed up by a second tradition of putting everything back after the kids tear up the manger scene. and then another thing we do, this is actually not all that uncommon now, but for the longest time, there was only one place in Houston you could get these. There was like an English import store, but we would have the crackers, and not like the kind you eat, but the kind that you pull. And now you can get them at like World Market. Yeah. But when I was growing up as a kid, we'd have crackers, and you put on the crowns and stuff like that. That's because my part of my dad's history working in oil gas is that he worked out of BP for a while in London. So they picked up some weird English hobbies, or traditions. My mother never really got over leaving London. It was like her favorite place on earth. So that was, I think, her way of remembering what she lost when she went to Houston, of all places, after living in South London.
Yeah. Annie?
We're trying to add crackers this year because, again, I'm in a stage of adult children. And so thinking through Christmas, these sacred days should have wonder and meaning for us at all ages, right? So it's not, you know, it's easy when you have little kids, you buy them a bunch of presents. You know, little kids are easy to make Christmas fun. So I've been trying to think about how as you know, a family of adults, and so we're going to try adding crackers to Christmas dinner to try and give it some kind of specialness. But I think so as family tradition, I want to give a word for celebrating St. Nicholas Day.
Oh yeah.
Because I do think the commercialization, you say the Hallmark, overall the excessive commercialization and consumer mentality does degrade the sacredness of Christmas and distract us from some of the more meaningful traditions. And so one way we've mitigated that is doing stockings on St. Nicholas Day. So it's not all presents, you know, stocking presents, tree, you know, spreading things out. So doing St. Nicholas Day, where we do our stockings on, that's the 6th, December 6th. And we read, we still do this. We still make the kids do this. We read our St. Nicholas book by Demi. Oh my goodness. It's a super fun book. Open our stocking gifts. And then that will be the day when we decide and do things to give to the community. So whatever donations we're doing that year, or you know, the shoebox, or you know, some kind of giving to others in the spirit of St. Nicholas Day. So we've had a lot of fun celebrating St. Nicholas. And then we have an icon of St. Nicholas that I got for us in Greece. And it's become sort of the patron saint for our family, because we've been celebrating St. Nicholas since the girls were teeny tiny. So that's a family tradition that we've enjoyed developing. And then in terms of church, like if I could get churches to be on board with this, I, growing up, had an Anglican church where they did Christmas Eve mass service, right, at 10 o'clock, like late. Mm-hmm. And you do your Christmas Eve service and then ends about midnight Christmas. And then everyone goes to the parish hall for a party all night long. And we would have people lead square dancing and Kaylee dancing, and there would be the feast. And, you know, and then you kind of stumble home at dawn, 6:30, 7 in the morning. But I mean, that's a way to mark, right, a day and a holiday. And getting to experience that as a kid, I just loved it. So I haven't been to a church since, but it kind of our modification is we always go to the latest Christmas Eve service we can, and love it when the service ends with, you know, the candlelight, silent night. Mm-hmm. And then as a family, we go home and we drive around like late at night, kind of just that lingering, right, in these last wee hours as Christ, as a mom who you think of like the magic it is when a child is born, and you just want to linger in that really precious, sacred moment, holding that newborn. And that Christmas Eve night had that kind of sacred, quiet feel you want to just linger in. And so coming home from church, we'll drive around and look at lights and then come into the house and sit in the kitchen and have a cup of hot chocolate and just see what conversation emerges. And we often find ourselves just talking in a kind of sweet, organic way and going to bed at, you know, 12:30 or 1 in the morning. And you know, that way of tying in the church, this old church tradition of like midnight mass with kind of lingering sweet moments as a family has been really precious to us.
All right, John, close us out. We'll give you the last answer here, and then I'll conclude.
Well, when I was a kid growing up, we would have Christmas dinner at my grandparents' house on Christmas Eve night, and my grandmother would make Christmas dinner. We'd go over there, and then we the next day, Christmas Day, my mother would make a Christmas meal for the lunch meal, and it was so my grandparents would come over for that. And so that was something we observed every year, and that meant a lot to us. My brother and I would open up each other's presents on Christmas Eve night, which was always fun. My brother and I didn't get along that great when we were growing up. We fought all the time. We didn't like each other very much. We really didn't like each other until we were adults. We didn't become friends. My brother became a Christian when I was maybe 20. No, 32 or 33. And he's a little bit older than me. So when he became a Christian, we became very good friends, but it wasn't really until very late But you know, that was one time of the year that we liked each other. Was Christmas Eve night when we would exchange gifts. So I have fond memories of that. Mm-hmm. And so that was a tradition that we observed when I was a kid. And my children, my two daughters, they give their presents to each other Christmas Eve night, which is fun. They like each other a lot more than my brother and I liked each other. And then for church tradition, you know, Baptists don't have any traditions. They're terrible at tradition. But, the church that my wife grew up in, they had a Christmas Eve service, and they would light all the candles, and everybody would have a candle and sing Silent Night at the end of the service. And they did it right. It was really well done. And I really enjoyed that at her church. And we've been in other churches who didn't do it right. You know, they like one church that we were at, we were members of, they would leave all the lights on and the candles. Like, come on, Lisa, y'all are rubes. You don't know how to do this right. You got to turn off all the lights, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember my daughter, Sally, she was about 9, and she went to the pastor and said, y'all need to turn the lights off. And he was like, wow, I never thought of that before. But we love that. And I also love late midnight masses. So not growing up a Christian, that was new to me when I became a Christian. And so we would go to in Atlanta when I was a new Christian and still in college and still at home, basically having Christmas, we would go to a Catholic church and go to midnight mass. Me and my friends would go and love that. And then my father grew up in a Episcopal church in Gordonsville, Virginia, which is a really small town. It's a very old Virginia town. And the Episcopal Church in Gordonsville is a beautiful, beautiful little church. And it's old. It's been in existence forever. There's a plaque on one of the pews that says that Robert E. Lee worshiped at this spot on this date. And so occasionally, you know, Mandy likes to go to bed early. So she would go to bed and I would go off to that church when we lived near Gordonsville and go to the 10 o'clock service Christmas Eve. And y'all will find this entertaining, but I would belt out all the Christmas songs, all the Christmas carols. And I had a lady turn around one time and say, you sing so, so lovely. And I said, well, thank you very much. I never get this compliment at my own church. But I
turns
I
out she was deaf, but you know.
Exactly. She was as deaf as a post.
Joyful noise.
And then in our church now, we have an Advent service on the fourth Sunday of Advent. And then we also have a Christmas Eve service. And then we all go to the pastor's house for a Christmas gathering, and that's a great deal of fun. And so that's something that's a tradition that we've observed as a family for about 5 or 6 years.
All right. Well, hey, friends, love you guys. Thank you so much for joining me for this. Hopefully, this becomes something of a Ciceronian Christmas tradition.
This will be a tradition.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do it.
Yeah, love it.
And I really appreciate this. If you've enjoyed this conversation, we hope you'll join us for our conference, which will be in Omaha, Nebraska, March 12th through the 14th. All these wonderful people will be there. The registration is open. And that again, it's March 14th, 12th through the 14th, 2026 at Creighton University in Omaha. Registration's open. Sponsorship opportunities are available. You've been listening to The Sower, a production of the Ciceronian Society. Be sure to rate and review this podcast, share it with your friends, check out our website at ciceroniansociety.org. Thank you for listening, and Merry Christmas.